Chapter 18. "You're wanted on the phone," Julia Schiller's wife called through the kitchen window. Schiller looked up from the barbecue in the backyard of his tree-shaded home in Chevy Chase. "They give a name?" "No, but it sounds like Dale Nichols." He sighed and held up a pair of tongs. "Come mind the steaks so they won't burn." Mrs. Schiller gave her husband a brief kiss as they passed each other on the porch. He entered his study, closed the door, and picked up the receiver. "Yes?" "Julius. Dale." "What's on your mind?"
"Sorry to call on a Sunday," said Nichols. "Did I interrupt anything?"
"Only a family barbecue."
"You must be a diehard. It's only 45 degrees outside."
"Beat smoking up the garage."
"Steak and scrambled eggs. That's my favorite."
Schiller caught Nichols's drift on the eggs and switched his phone onto a secure line that entered a computerized scramble mode.
"Okay, Dale, what have you got?"
"Hala Camille. The exchange came off smoothly."
"Her look-alike is at Walter Reed Hospital?" Schiller asked.
"Under tight security to go along with the act."
"Who doubled for her?"
"Terry Rooney, the actress.
She did a superb makeup job. You couldn't tell her apart from the real Secretary General unless you were nose to nose.
As a backup, we arranged a press conference by hospital doctors. They gave out a story describing her serious condition."
"And Camille?"
"She remained on the Air Force plane that brought her from Greenland. After refueling, it flew to Buckley Field near Denver. From there, she was flown by helicopter to Breckenridge."
"The ski resort in Colorado?"
"Yes, she's resting comfortably at Senator Pitt's chalet just outside of town. No injuries except a few bruises and a mild case of frostbite."
"How is she taking her forced convalescence?"
"No word yet. Hala was heavily sedated when she was carried from the hospital at Thule. But she'll go along when she learns of our operation to safeguard her arrival at the UN headquarters to address the opening session of the General Assembly. A reliable source close to her says she plans on making a scathing indictment of Yazid, exposing him as a religious charlatan and offering proof of his underground terrorist activities."
"I've read a report from the same source," Schiller admitted.
5 days until the opening session," said Nichols. "Yazid will pull out all stops to blow her away."
"She's got to be kept on ice until she steps to the podium," Schiller said, deadly serious.
"She's safe," said Nichols. "Any word from the Egyptian government on your end?"
"President Hassan is giving us his full cooperation regarding Camille. He's scratching every hour he can buy or steal to launch his new economic reforms and replace military leaders with men he can trust. Hala Camille is the only thread preventing Yazid from attempting a quick grab for the Egyptian government. If Yazid's assassins stop her before her speech goes out over world news satellite channels, there is a real danger of Egypt becoming another Iran before the month is out."
"Relax. Yazid won't get wise to the scam until it's too late," said Nichols confidentially.
"I assume she is under heavy guard?"
"By a top team of Secret Service agents. The President is personally keeping a tight grip on the operation."
Schiller's wife knocked on the door and spoke loudly from the other side. "Steaks are ready, Julius."
"In a minute," he answered. Nichols picked up on the exchange. "That's all I have for now. I'll let you get back to your stakes."
"I'd feel better if the FBI was lending a hand," said Schiller.
"The White House security staff has considered every contingency. The President thought it best to keep all intelligence within a tight circle."
Schiller paused pensively for a moment. Then he said,
"Don't screw it up, Dale."
"Not to worry. I promise Hala Camille will arrive at the UN building in New York in pristine condition and full of fire."
"She'd better.
Does the sun set in the west?"
Schiller set down the phone. He had an uneasy feeling. He hoped to God the White House knew what it was doing.
Across the street, three men sat in the back of a Ford van with Capital Plumbing 24-hour emergency service painted on the panels. The cramped interior was crowded with electronic eavesdropping equipment. Tedium had set in 5 hours ago. Surveillance is perhaps the most boring job since watching rails rust. Irritation was in the air. One man smoked and the other two didn't and couldn't stand the stale air. All were stiff and cold. Former counter-espionage agents, they had resigned to become independent contractors. Most retired agents occasionally take on an outside job for the government. But these three were among the very few who respected money more than patriotic duty. And they sold whatever classified information they could ferret out to the highest bidder. One of them, a blonde scarecrow type, peered through binoculars out a tinted window at Schiller's house. "He's leaving the study." The fat man, hunched over a recording machine with earphones, nodded in agreement. All talk has ceased. The third, who had a great waxed handlebar mustache, operated a laser parabolic, a sensitive microphone that received voice sounds inside a room from the vibrations on a window pane, and then magnified them through fiber optics onto a sound channel. "Anything interesting?" asked the skinny blonde. The fat man removed the earphones and wiped his sweating forehead. "I think my share from this gig will pay off my fishing boat. I love a marketable commodity. This information is worth big bucks to the right party." "Who have you got in mind?" asked the one with the mustache. The fat man grinned like a glutted coyote. "A wealthy, high-placed raghead who wants to make points with Ahmad Yazid."